This is continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage.
In the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell
from the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hidden Killers podcast.
And we're up to segment number three in our continuous coverage of the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell. Let's go to the courtroom.
Maybe a little blurry on the overhead projector, but can you see that on your screen?
I can see it.
Could you go ahead and indicate the date those messages were sent and indicate who they are being sent from, who's receiving them, and read them into the record?
Okay. This text chain was October 20th, 2019, between 7:48 and 8:33 in the morning. I put in here that Lori was currently in Hawaii. Lori's, the way this reads, is everything to the on the right side of the screen where her name is, and then Chad is on the left. Everything in pink would be Lori, and everything in blue would be comments from Chad. Lori starts, "I am missing you more. I need you desperately. Heart. I can't wait. Two kiss emojis. Need you to hold me tight. That would be great. What about the idea of you coming here Thursday or Friday? Or do you want me to come home?" Question mark. Chad replies, "Their apartment is haunted and we can't clear the place. So they are looking to move anyway, and I have the perfect place for them. I need to be here to get some sorting, to get sorting the financial stuff, and I truly need your help. So please come home Thursday so we can spend the night together. Then, as soon as I have things under control, we can return. I seriously want you to look for a condo for us while you are there that we can return to at the first of the month." Lori replies, "I know exactly where we should be. I don't really care where we are as long as you are holding me forever. Heart emoji. I love," Chad replies, "I want to get going full," I believe it's supposed to be STEM, "on a Lily workout plan, tighten the abs, get a full body tan, and grow my hair out. This could be really good for both of us." Lori replies, "I love that plan," kiss emoji. "It's not soon enough, though. This is torture. Maybe you need to clear my mind so I can't remember how much I love you," heart emoji. "I will try, but it feels like Raphael and Lily are together at about 100%. Not sure if this will ever be lower again." Lori replies, "That's true. I do feel you," heart emoji. "I feel lovesick. I can't sleep. I don't want to eat. I just want you. It's so consuming." And I think those are sad faces. Chad replies, "I know exactly how you feel. I am feeling sad, but it isn't for the reason everyone thinks."
And again, these messages are being exchanged the day after Chad reports Tammy deceased?
Yes.
And could you also indicate the date and time on these messages and who they're being sent from, who to, and then read them into the record?
October 20th, 2019, 7:48 to 8:33 a.m. Lori's still in Hawaii. "Lori, what's on your agenda today?" Chad replies, "Need to get ready to meet with the mortuary, but I hope to be able to talk in a few hours after I get my parents to go home. I love you so much, my sweet Lily. What time does Audrey arrive?" Lori replies, "She gets here at 2 my time, so 6 your time. We are going to Sacrament at 9 to listen to see Lisa, hopefully. Kiss emoji, I love you, heart emoji. Chad, I love you most." On October 23rd, 2019 at 8:24, Chad sends Lori a text message. "I love you, Lily, eagerly anticipating our alone time, craving you intensely." 3 fire emojis.
And that last message, the 23rd, is sent the day after Tammy's funeral?
Correct.
Was Tammy Daybell's body exhumed?
It was.
Are you aware of the results of the autopsy?
I am.
What were those results?
Homicide by asphyxiation.
Through your investigation, did you learn whether or not Tammy had life insurance?
I did.
And did she?
She did.
Do you know how many policies?
She had two policies.
Are you aware through your investigation if those policies paid out?
They both did.
And do you know who the recipient of those was?
Chad Daybell.
And do you know when Chad and Lori got married?
I do.
When was that?
November of 2019, November 5th. I believe it's the 5th.
We talked earlier about this being a joint investigation.
It was.
And you were also involved in looking for the missing children?
I was.
As part of your involvement, were you involved in a search of the Daybell property that occurred on June 9th and 10th of 2020?
I was.
Was there someone that was in charge of that scene?
Yes.
Were you assigned specific tasks?
I was.
And, Your Honor, I've been handed State's Exhibit 10 and the subsequent parts. I would ask to be able to publish 10F. I'm not sure if counsel would like to see that first.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Was it previously admitted?
Yes, Your Honor, it was previously admitted.
All right. Thank you, counsel.
And before I publish that, just a couple other questions. Are you aware of the last time Tylee was seen?
Yeah, September 22nd, 2019.
Was that Tylee or JJ?
JJ, I apologize. Yeah, and September 8th.
And JJ was last seen on September 22nd?
Correct.
And that was of 2019?
Yes.
When you responded out to the search, you said you were assigned a specific task in the search?
I was.
What was your role in that?
I was assigned to search underneath a tree on the north part of the property.
And, Your Honor, I would now ask to publish State's Exhibit 10F.
Any objection?
No, Your Honor.
It can be published.
Were you given instruction on how to conduct the search?
Yeah.
What instruction were you given?
We were instructed to slowly and methodically look for a very designated spot that we believe that somebody might be.
Did you notice anything regarding the spot where it was believed a body might be?
I did. From the vantage point of standing directly above the tall grass when we first got there, you could see that the contour of the earth was a little bit different. The grass was something had been disturbed in the like a form of a rectangle. You could see that from directly standing above it.
And what actions did you take in regards to the recovery?
So I began searching with a few other investigators. We cleared away that taller grass. We then slowly and methodically, under the direction of the FBI's evidence recovery team, peeled that first layer of grass back, exposed some dirt. We went down through the dirt. It exposed some rocks. We were using small tools, brushes. Once those rocks were exposed, we removed the rocks. There was more dirt. There were boards, two boards. And we removed the boards. There was dirt. And then exposed to my right, as I was kneeling down on my hands, there was what appeared to be shape of maybe a head in a black bag.
And so as part of the search, did you also use your hands?
Yes.
Were you sifting through the dirt and digging with your hands as well?
Yes.
When you talk about seeing the round object or what appeared to be a head, did you observe what was done next?
I did.
What was that?
FBI's lead cut a small hole in the black bag. It exposed a white bag. And he cut a small hole in the white bag and it exposed brown blonde hair.
And you were present for that?
I was. And then my experience after that was this flood of emotion that we found him, that we probably found JJ, and thoughts of my own son that was the same age.
I have no further questions.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Blake. cross-examination?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, I'm trying to... Just trying to make sure I return the exhibits.
Morning, Mr. Edwards.
Morning.
How you doing?
I'm okay.
Good. So it looks like you first started working in 2004 with the Pocatello Police Department, is that right?
That is correct.
Did you have any employment before that?
I did. Yeah, I worked, prior to that, I worked for ISU Public Safety. It's campus security for Idaho State University.
Okay, and how long did you do that?
A couple of years. It would have been 2002 to 2004 as I was going through school.
You went to school at ISU?
I did.
Did you get a degree?
I have an associate's degree in law enforcement. I have a bachelor's degree in criminal justice, and I have a master's degree in strategic leadership.
All right. So you got your associate's degree. Did you get that at ISU?
I did.
Okay. And you said you had a bachelor's degree in?
Criminal justice.
Criminal justice.
Yep.
Where'd you get that?
American Intercontinental University. I did it online.
And when did you get that degree?
Now, that's a tough question. 2007? I don't know. I don't remember. It's been a while ago.
So a
master's degree as well.
Okay. So American Intercontinental, that's an online college?
Yes.
Is it accredited with the?
It is. It's an accredited university.
Okay.
Yep.
And your master's degree, where did you get that?
University of Charleston, West Virginia. Also accredited. I couldn't tell you the year I graduated on that. It's been a couple of years ago.
Okay. Is that also an online university?
It's a actual university. It's got a physical campus. I completed it online.
Okay. So you testified that you became involved in the Tammy Daybell case in April of 2020, is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. And you indicated that Tammy was working at a school as a librarian, is that right?
A librarian, yes.
Okay. And part of your investigation, did you go to that school and talk to anybody there?
I did.
Who'd you talk to?
I'd have to go back. I talked to a number of coworkers of hers. I'd have to look back at my reports. I did a number of reports. I believe there's 26 of my reports out there. But coworkers of hers that had worked with her and Emma.
Mm-hmm. Emma worked there too. You understood that?
That's my understanding, yes.
Okay. So there was... there was an exhibit, 184C, where you indicated that there were 90 calls and text messages between Alex, Chad, Zulema, and Lori between 9:12 a.m. on October the 9th and 2:28 a.m. on October the 10th. You recall that exhibit?
The one that we talked about creating?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember.
All right. You indicate that there were 8 text messages between Alex and Chad between 1:19 p.m. and 1:22 p.m.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about what those texts were about?
I actually don't know all of the context of each of those text messages and phone calls. We don't have the content for some of them.
So you just saw that there were text messages. You don't know what they were talking about?
Correct.
They could have been talking about going to lunch or going to dinner or any number of things, right?
Correct.
Okay. You indicated that there was some sort of an attempted shooting At 9:15 p.m. that night?
Yes.
Okay. And then there was an email that was shown to you or that you knew about, right?
From Tammy DeMarc, is that
right.
What you're referring to?
Yes. And in there, she brings up the fact that she thinks that it's some kid in the neighborhood, right?
Yes.
That shot at her?
That somebody shot at her.
Right. But she thinks it's a specific kid in the neighborhood, right?
I believe so.
All right. Did you talk to any? You said you talked to a number of neighbors.
I did.
Did you talk to this specific kid that was referenced in this email?
I'm not sure who that specific kid was that wasn't mentioned.
Okay. Who did you talk to?
Talked to Regan Price, directly south. There were others. Again, there were other people that I interviewed. Specifically to the paintball question was Regan and Matt Price.
And who's Regan Price?
Their neighbor.
Okay. Approximate age?
Oof. That's a dangerous one. Younger than me.
Younger than you.
Younger than me.
You've been a police officer for a number of years.
I have.
You're a professional investigator.
Yep.
I think you could probably gauge someone's age, don't you think?
Late 20s, early 30s.
Late 20s, early 30s. And Matt as well?
Yes.
All right. And they said that nobody in the neighborhood had paint guns.
Not to their knowledge. Matt was a youth teacher or a youth advisor.
Mm-hmm.
Was going to try to coordinate some sort of activity with the kids because the boys wanted to shoot paintballs, but nobody had a paintball gun, was what I was told.
Oh, okay. All right. You were shown a photograph of a 6.5 Grendel, right?
Yes.
Okay. Did you actually handle that firearm?
I did.
So you know that it's a fairly heavy firearm.
It is a heavy firearm.
Yeah. A lot heavier than your average paintball gun.
It is.
Yeah. And you said that there was some sort of a search on Grendel drop from 100 to 300 yards.
Correct.
And you thought that that was interesting because Alex owned a Grendel, right?
Yes.
And there was an allegation that Tammy may have been shot at with a paintball gun.
Or with a Grendel.
All right. And so you, in the course of your investigation, you testified that you went out to the house, right?
I did.
All right. You probably asked people, or let me just ask you, did you ask anyone where Tammy was standing and where this person, this masked man was standing?
I did.
All right. And it was, I'm probably going to, was it more than 100 yards?
No.
No.
It was close.
It was very close.
It was.
And so you've talked about your experience in using assault rifles and the fact that you were on the SWAT team and those kinds of things. And reading the email about Tammy thinking that it was a paintball gun because she heard a click and a whoosh, is that consistent with someone shooting you at close range with a firearm like a 6.5 Grendel?
Probably not.
Probably not. You were shown Exhibit 184D, which you indicate that you made, that was a timeline on October the 9th, 2019, from 5 p.m. to 12:28 p.m., or 12:28 a.m. You remember that?
There were two. You have to show me which one exactly we're talking about.
Sure. Your Honor, can I publish 184D?
Yes.
Can I just use my copy, or should I use the court's or the original copy?
Well, if we can ensure that you've got the same information on yours, I don't mind.
We'll just use the court. I don't want to make a record of it, of anything odd.
And I will indicate for the record the copies were the same that were provided to defense counsel.
Okay. We'll just publish directly from the admitted exhibit.
So you're looking at 184D. Does this look familiar to you?
It does. Yep.
All right. And when you talked earlier about there being text messages between Alex and Chad and Lori and Zulema and Chad and Lori, and you don't have those text messages, right?
No.
So you don't know what they were talking about?
Correct.
Could be any number of things.
It could.
All right. You're not speculating that it was about this specific event, right?
Well, I could say that it was, based on my training and experience, I believe they were talking about an attempted shooting.
Okay. Of a paintball gun?
No, of a homicide.
Okay. All right. On Exhibit 184E, this is a timeline between October 18th and 19th, 2019, between 6:13 p.m. and 12:35 a.m. You remember that?
If you'll show it to me, it'd be great.
Does that look familiar to you?
It does.
Okay. Again, these text messages, you don't have any of them. You don't know what they're talking about.
Correct.
All right. And we look in the memo, it says 10:07 p.m. Alex's phone arrives at LDS Church 2.6 miles away, right?
Correct.
All right. There's been earlier testimony that said that this was actually, that there was some sort of a geofence, that it was within 150 meters. Is that correct?
I can't remember that. I didn't testify to that.
You're not going to testify to that?
About what?
About the geofence being around, and that's where they found it? That's how they got to arriving at the LDS Church?
I got this from the CAST report, correct. If that's what you're talking about, I got this information from the CAST report that I reviewed.
Okay. So if the CAST report says that it's within 150 yards of the LDS Church,
yep. Okay.
That wouldn't be at the LDS Church, right?
Your Honor, I'm going to object. Counsel's adding testimony not in the record. And I think the witness had already answered regarding the geofence.
I'll overrule that.
So you're testifying to other people's reports, and you're saying that this is at the church?
Correct.
Right. But if the other testimony, the CAST report, indicates that it was 150 meters around the church, that would be more correct.
I'm going to object. This misstates the evidence.
I think it's bringing in facts that weren't testified to by the witness, so I'll sustain that.
Okay, Judge, can we have a sidebar?
Yes. All right, thank you, Counsel. You can continue with your cross.
So you were testifying that you had reviewed the CAST report. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. And you didn't review any of the geofence information that came from any of the search warrants?
I believe I reviewed it. I probably couldn't talk about it right now. I wouldn't know. I couldn't remember it.
Okay. Do we have no further questions?
Redirect.
Yes, Your Honor. In Investigator Edwards, as part of your investigation, did you review phone data with other investigators?
Yes.
And were there other investigators that input the data and created charts or other information for in and put it into a readable format?
Yes.
And did you review that data?
Yes.
And the distance from the church to Chad's house was approximately what distance?
2.6 miles.
When you reviewed contact on October 9th and then again on October 18th to October 19th, was there contact between Alex and Lori?
Yes.
Was there contact between Chad and Alex?
Yes.
Was there contact between Chad and Lori?
Yes.
You were asked about if an AR was fired or if a Grendel was fired, if it would make a whooshing sound.
Yes.
If a firearm jams or misfires, would there be any kind of a sound?
No. There might be a bolt or something, maybe the clicking on the trigger, number of things that could possibly happen. But if it jams before a round comes out, there might be minimal noise.
If a round was actually fired off and went by someone's head, would they potentially hear a sound?
Yes.
What kind of a sound might they hear?
A whooshing sound.
You were asked about whether or not you followed up on the report of a teenager that may be a suspect in regards to owning a paintball gun.
Correct.
And you did not follow up with him?
No.
Again, when you're conducting an investigation, do you go where the evidence takes you?
I do.
Did you locate evidence suggesting or showing a device associated with Alex Cox was in the area of the Daybell residence on October 9th of 2019?
Yes.
Did you review Google searches from a Homer J. Maximus regarding drops and other information regarding a drop from specific yards?
Yes.
And that was an account linked to Alex Cox?
Correct.
Did you also look at a Grendel that was found at an apartment associated with Alex Cox?
I did.
Did you find contact between Alex and Chad on October 9th of 2019?
I did.
And again, what's the connection between Chad and Alex?
Lori Vallow.
I have no further questions.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Blake. That'll conclude the testimony of this witness then. Will the witness be released from any subpoena?
Yes, Your Honor, we would request.
Any objection?
No objection.
All right. Thank you. The bailiff will help assist you out of the courtroom. All right, Ms. Blake, where does the state stand at this point on its case in chief?
Your Honor, the state would request a sidebar.
Very well. All right, we're back on the record now on KCR 22-211624. The court had a sidebar with counsel to discuss scheduling for the remainder of today. At this point, the court has determined there are a few additional matters to take up outside of the presence of the jurors, which we'll do shortly. I am advised that our lunch has been delivered here early, so given the timing, we're going to go ahead and have the lunch recess at this time. Once that's concluded, we'll set that for an hour. So at 12:40, we'll come back on the record for additional proceedings.
All right, please. Okay, folks, you're free to go.
please grab all your belongings to take with you. And we'll be- Thank you. Please be seated. ...22-21-1624, State of Idaho versus Lori Noreen Vallow. We just concluded the lunch recess. The jurors are not yet present in the courtroom. Prosecution's here, the defendant, as well as the defense attorneys. Before we bring the jurors in, counsel, I wanted to inquire. There was a question on making sure all of the exhibits that were admitted through the witnesses that have testified thus far were in the court's record. Counsel, is there anything you want to put on the record from the state as it relates to exhibits at this time?
Your Honor, it's my understanding that we did have an opportunity to review the exhibit list and confirm with the clerks the admission of the exhibits that had been presented by the state.
Okay, so you don't see any amendments we need to make to what's already been lodged?
We do not, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay. One issue I'll clarify, I'm not sure we've received yet. We had on those guns and the baffle of the gun and the two baffles, we had an agreement that in lieu of submitting the physical items into evidence,
I think we have the image that the court is requesting just being brought in now.
Okay.
I am not sure that we do have one of the baffles, so we can get that. We've not shown this to defense counsel if we can show them. It is an image of the firearm that was brought in, just a photograph taken of it.
So this is what's going to go into the record, or is this what's going to go back to the jury room, or both?
This is only for purposes of post-trial record,
okay.
Not what goes in as evidence. The exhibit itself will be allowed to be viewed by the jurors in deliberations. This is for the appellate record.
Okay. I'm okay with that.
And, Your Honor, we had failed to pull the photograph of the baffles. We'd forgotten, so we are requesting that one be provided, and we can show that to counsel in the court as well. We're just messaging someone to get a photo of those.
Okay, and counsel, given the time, I don't see it as a problem to get those in and submitted. They are really, it's a different type of submission of evidence where they're replacing the physical evidence for the record of the case to be lodged in the case. So I don't believe those are required to be already in the record before the state rests, is what I'm saying. I think those can be put in at any point before the case is totally concluded.
Would you like those marked with an exhibit sticker reflecting the exhibit number and then maybe just a note indicating that it was really a physical exhibit?
I think that's how the rule would read for you to do that, is to have them relate to what they're the representation of a physical exhibit that was too large or dangerous to include to be held for the appellate record.
So we will get the photo of the baffle, show that to defense first to make sure that that doesn't cause them any concern, and then we can get them marked and submitted to the court.
Okay, and we can get those in, like I say, unlike other evidence that must be submitted in your case in chief, that's sort of a replacement under the rule for the record of the case, not the exhibit. So at some point, I don't think it's necessarily required to be done right at this time. So if you'll just follow up on that, we'll make sure that it comports with the order that we already entered on the record as it relates to those three exhibits. All right. At this point, then, I believe we're probably ready to have the jurors return so we can continue the proceedings. Is that correct? Anything else the state wishes to bring up before the jurors are brought in?
And, Your Honor, I think the only other issue is there is a clerical error in the indictment. We were trying to get the amended indictment corrected for the court, but due to the format that we had it saved in, we'd run into some technical issues. I'm not sure if we could make a record of that and then get that clerical error corrected and submitted to the court.
Is that going to be brought as a motion then to alter or amend the indictment?
Yes, Your Honor. Oh, an amended information or, yeah, the amended indictment.
Is the defense aware of that?
No, this is the first time we've heard of that.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that either. So that would be, I think, properly a motion to be argued outside the presence of the jurors. Would you agree with that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, given the status of where we are, I think we need to get that issue taken care of and resolved before the jurors probably return would be the time to do it, although I do want to have the defense an adequate opportunity to see what the proposed amendment would be. So if you have that information, why don't you discuss it with the defense, and then I'll come back on the record, and we can have a motion, if there is one, as it relates to any altering or amendment of the state's indictment.
That sounds good, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay, we'll be in recess.
All right.
Thank you. Please be seated. All right, we're back on the record on case CR 22-21-1624, State of Idaho versus Lori Noreen Vallow. The state, I believe, is preparing to rest, but has brought up a few issues before it does so. And one of the issues mentioned on the record was a proposal to make a motion or argue to in some way amend or alter the indictment in the case. Ms. Blake, is there a request or motion by the state to do so?
Your Honor, there it is.
All right, counsel, the court will note that, give me just a moment. This motion is governed by Idaho Criminal Rule 7E. And with that in mind, Mr. Wood, if you're arguing the motion, you can do so.
That wraps up segment number three in our continuous coverage to the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell. There's much more to come. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of it.
This is continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage. In the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell from the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Hidden Killers Podcast.